yesterday, but not in time to be submitted for our action today. So we're planning on taking that up next Tuesday. But we do have two bills from Representative Hansen. The first one, House File 162, dealing with drainage system provisions. Representative Hansen, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 162 to pass as recommended and go to the local government division.
Okay. Representative Hansen moves that House File 162 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State Government and Local Operations. And Representative Hansen to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Those of you who have been here before and for those members who are new, about 4 years ago we started a process relating to drainage and we established a work group. I think there's a good example of a broad cross-section of folks working together to come forward with the recommendations on looking at drainage law. We did have some drafting errors in the bill, and so I would like to move an author's amendment to the 62A1 amendment to get the bill into the shape that I would like it in. So I'd like to move that amendment.
Okay, Representative Hansen moves the H162A1 amendment. And any, do you want to speak to the amendment or just?
Primarily, these are recommendations that came from the work group, and in the drafting, weren't able to get those in for whatever reason. Mr. Kane, do you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Al Kane, service chief engineer for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I also serve as the facilitator for the stakeholder drainage work group. And there was one additional change that members of the work group and I have discussed, that is in subdivision 3, that was not in the previous consensus recommendations summary. And that is on lines 1.9 and 1.10 of the amendment.
Okay. And seeing no discussion, Representative Hansen again moves the 162A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to have Mr. Kane go through the bill. I'm going to give a little background. You may remember, some members may remember last year, there was a bill that came up near the end of session by Representative Olin, and we asked that go to the drainage work group to look at that bill, and that bill is included in here. The work group looked at it, saw that there wasn't a problem with it, so we referred it to them, and it has come back here, and Mr. Kane can talk about that.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Chairman, members, you should have two documents in your packets that will help us go through this. The first is one that is the printout from a webpage on the Bowser website labeled Drainage with the Bowser logo on the upper left. This document does have a summary of the drainage work group, its members, who on the first page there you can see in the table of members, there's more than 20 entities who are members of the drainage work group, broad cross-section of different interests in drainage. And as Representative Hansen indicated, the work group has been around for about 3-4 years, and recall that back in 2007, the legislature did in fact adopt a number of consensus recommendations of the work group to clarify drainage law. And what's before us today are some additional recommendations in terms of updating and clarifying drainage law, and also recommendations in regard to additional cost share for records modernization, drainage records modernization. The primary areas of recommended clarification of drainage law are in regard to section 103E227, which is in regard to impoundment and diversion of drainage system water. And this section of law was has been recommendations for clarification. It is used substantially in regard to impoundment type projects, which does include wetland restoration, and therefore the Board of Water and Soil Resources and our partners use this section of drainage law with drainage authorities quite extensively when a restoration is on a public drainage system. So in our experience in using it, we identified some issues that weren't addressed very well. In terms of one in particular is the rerouting of a drainage system. The original section of law did not envision that type of a situation. And it is fairly frequent for wetland restorations and similar types of impoundments. So there was a provision added. And then there was other clarifications that will make it easier for proponents of wetland restorations and other impoundments to partner with drainage authorities for the cost and to clarify then the maintenance, long-term maintenance responsibilities for different aspects of those projects. What is an impoundment, for example, that the project proponent should be responsible for versus a reroute, for example, of existing drainage systems that just becomes then a part of that drainage system for which the drainage authority maintains its responsibilities and authority. Another section of drainage law that is related to that in terms of being used in particular for wetland restorations and other impoundments is 103E805. And it is the removal and partial abandonment section of drainage law. The issues that we've encountered in using that with drainage authorities are that it has two fundamental functions. One is removal of a portion of property from the drainage system, and the other is partial abandonment. The way that the section was written, those two functions were intermixed in a way that it became confusing to drainage authorities and to others using that section of law about how to best apply it. So the drainage work group had a number of meetings over an extensive period of time since the last time that we were before you with recommendations, and developed some recommendations for 805. A fundamental one of that is to separate the two functions that are in the current 805 into 805 and 806. So the removal function would remain in section 805, and the partial abandonment function would be separated out and moved into section 806. And there's several other clarifications as part of that, but that's really the fundamental purpose of what the drainage work group is recommending, is to separate and clarify those two functions of drainage law, not to change any of the criteria that is in current drainage law for how those are used. Representative Hansen mentioned that Representative Olin and Senator Stumpf as well last session had recommended increasing the drainage system repair fund limit. It had not been increased since 1980. And so just with a cost of or an inflationary index, the value of $40,000, which is in the current law, would correspond to about $105,000. And the drainage work group did look at that and is in fact recommending that the repair fund limit be raised from $40,000 to $100,000, round number. At the same time, the drainage work group decided to look at other monetary numbers in drainage law to see if those should be modified in any way. And so there are other recommendations within Representative Hansen's bill that are recommendations to increase some numbers, to remove some numbers, if you will, that don't fit the current reality. But again, in all cases, retaining the same intent of the law. There's no change in intent. I won't go through all of those individual pieces of recommendations on dollar limits unless you care to do that. But again, he advised that it was about updating numbers. It was about clarifying how project petitioner, for example, paid for certain things that the auditor of the county incurs cost for hearings, for example. And other numbers that we try to ensure correlated with, for example, the update that the legislature passed last session regarding the uniform municipal contracting law. So we tried to ensure that we were being consistent with those numbers as well. And then the last recommendation that the drainage work group had made in the 2008 consensus recommendation is for continued cost share for public drainage ditch records modernization. Recall that the legislature had provided funding to Bowser for cost share through the Local Water Challenge Grant Program for drainage records modernization to the amount of $500,000 during the current fiscal year. And that money has, in fact, gone to that use. There were 44 applications, totaling a total request of $1.35 million. We had $500,000 available. There were 22, about half of the applicants, counties, and watershed districts received funding for drainage records modernization, and the work group is recommending continued funding in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. any questions at all?
I should note, Mr. Chair, that Mr. Kane is hearing. He's not. This is not a Bowser agency recommendation. He is here as the staff person with the technical experience, and members of the work group who are here that work with Mr. Kane and have been supportive of this consensus effort.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members, I would also just note, follow up with what Representative Hansen indicated, is that it's my understanding that the governor has not adopted, or at least that we can tell in the governor's budget so far, the funding for drainage records modernization. So again, as Representative Hansen indicated, I'm here on behalf of the drainage work group, which I do serve as a facilitator.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kane, and thank you for the good work that you've been doing on this issue. It's a very expansive membership to the working group, and I think it's a good model for a lot of other groups to follow as far as getting consensus agreements on important issues. Representative Hansen, did you have any further comments you want to make on the bill? I
appreciate the effort and appreciate the work of all the people who are in the audience who spent the time and energy on this. Drainage is a difficult subject. Really what we're doing is updating the law. That a lot of it hasn't been looked at for 20 or 30 years. It's a very contentious area. And so by clarifying and modernizing the law, it hopefully will help reduce litigation and make it clearer for landowners to comply. So, and renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File, oh, I'm sorry, we did have a question here. Representative Hagbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with the money that's in the bill, I'm sorry I came in late, but the bill could be going to local government. Is that the motion?
That is correct. It goes to the policy committees first, and then it goes to finance.
Several meetings of committees going to see this bill?
I assume that that's where it'll be going after it goes to local government. But Representative Hansen could respond.
That's my intent, that it would go to finance.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 162 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Local Government Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Okay, and next we do have another bill from Representative Hansen. House File 297, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to move House File 297 and path is recommended path and go to the state government operations and the local government decisions.
Senator Hansen moves that House File 297 be recommended path and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform. Representative Hansen to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I did provide a copy of the bill to the Met Council to look at, and they had some recommendations where we can reduce some overhead with this. There's an existing commission, and so I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hansen moved the A1 amendment to get it in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted, and Representative Hansen to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 297 as amended had its genesis with myself door knocking in my district, running into dog owners who raised the question about permit fees and going from dog park to dog park. And so I began doing the research during the summer on this. The bill, what it does is it creates a regional dog park permit program that also provides funding. After this goes through the local government and policy committees, it also goes to the finance committee and environmental finance, and it does use funds from the constitutional amendment, Parks and Trails Fund, to fund grants to go to local units of government for the acquisition, development, and maintenance of dog parks. And I have with me today Chris Esther. Chris is with the City of South St. Paul. In my district, we've just had a dog park that has been established, and he'll be able to give a little discussion about what happens at dog parks, kind of the dog park procedure. But this grant program, if there are grants for local governments, we also provide an administrative procedure for a permit that citizens in the metro area could get, where they could bring their dog to a park, have their family take the park permit around in that area, if those parks have received grants from the fund. So it provides dollars for local governments on dog parks. I appropriate money to pay for that grant program, and the $25 dog park fee is to cover the administrative costs to Met Council for issuing that permit and administering that process. So that Mr. Esther could talk a little bit about how a dog park gets established and kind of the cost and those types of things.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Esther, if you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Esther. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of South St. Paul. South St. Paul is a first-ring suburb of St. Paul. We're just right across the river. And I'm pleased to be here today to tell you a little bit about dog park. Our dog park had its grand opening in September of 2008, so our dog park is relatively new. We did a lot of best practices research of how dog parks work, not only here in the Twin Cities area, the state of Minnesota, but also in other states. So I just want to go through a quick overview. Hopefully you have a handout in front of you. It just has a quick two-sheet overview of what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon. And also we have a brochure from our actual dog park titled Capota Landing, South St. Paul. Your copy's maybe black and white, mine's green, because it's the Environmental Committee, but we didn't change the color, it's always green. And also you should have a couple photos of one of our dog park and also of Alla Magnet Dog Park, which is in Burnsville, Minnesota. Capota Landing exists as a 87-acre park area. It used to be a demolition landfill up until 2007. We did get two appropriations from the state of Minnesota to cap the property to make it into usable parkland at the cost of $4.5 million. That process was completed in early 2008. When that process was completed, we had a decision to make of what park elements we wanted to put there. We do have a master plan in place for the park that we completed in a comprehensive way with South St. Paul residents and area folks. And I decided that the best first element to put in the Capota Landing would be the off-leash dog area. I'm going to refer to it as a dog park, because a lot of people just kind of chop it up, but the formal name for one of these places is an off-leash dog area. So when people come there, it's there to take their dog off-leash to exercise. Why did we decide to do a dog park at Exposure Landing? When we completed the master plan, as Representative Hansen had mentioned, door knocking, that we also heard at the city level a lot of interest in a dog park. I don't have any specific statistics on how many dogs there are in Minnesota or the Twin Cities metro area, but some friends groups will tell you that there's just as many dogs as children in the Twin Cities. I can't confirm that, but if you think we're building parks, we're building playgrounds for kids, for families, why not have a place for dogs to go as well? We heard a lot of that from our residents. South St. Paul being a built out community as well, we have very small yards, apartment areas, where we don't have large open spaces for people to exercise their pets, so that was another need recognized. In consideration of the two grand place we had down the Mississippi River, we thought, frankly, if we don't build the dog park, the whole park might become a dog park, so we wanted to segment 6.3 acres of the park itself to be designated as the off-leash dog area. If you have questions about size, what's the average, you're going to hear a variety of answers. Some places have dog parks as large as 20 acres, some as small as an acre. Ours is 6.3 acres, and it seems to work very well. It's one giant area. I did say we researched this using a best practices approach. In the Twin Cities area, the local dog parks we surveyed, which have been in operation a lot longer than ours have, very successfully, Three Rivers Park District in the West Metro area has operated dog parks for about the last 15 years. Alamagnet Dog Park in the city of Burnsville has actually won a national award from Dog Fancy Magazine for how sophisticated their park is. They have a very strong friends group, and also Dakota County operates Dakota Woods, which is an Empire Township. So those were some of the models we used to find out what have you done right, what have you done wrong. If you had to do it over, what would you do? And we use them as a model. Our dog park, if you take away the site preparation, which happened when the landfill was closed, our dog park cost about $52,000 to complete. What is in our dog park? Let me just go through a list of amenities. Basically, it's a 6.3 acre large oval shaped area within the center of the park, adjacent to a regional trail that has a 4-foot high segment fence. And we also have two picnic shelters there, some other general amenities that any park would have, a portable toilet, things like that. The entry area, what a dog park term is a bullpen, basically a double gated area. If you look at one of your photos of our actual Exposure Landing dog park, you can see the bullpen entry area. Basically, the idea is you bring in your dog on leash. When you're inside the bullpen area, you can take them off the leash. Then there's another gate to have them enter. So you can either put them on leash or off leash to get them into the park or out. So it's just kind of a holding area, basically. In the industry, it's called a bullpen. That's not my term, but that's what that means. Also, some other dog park designs our dog park does not have. A lot of dog parks have water features where people use retrieving and take their dogs swimming. Also, there's sometimes designated areas where they have their dog park sectioned off into areas for small dogs versus large dogs, frail and timid dogs we're starting to hear about, want to be separated. Some dog parks have installed dog wash stations where if there's a water feature there and you're doing some retrieving with your dog, sometimes they want to hose them down, so there's a station for that. Our site was limited to a very flat, open, as I said, a former demolition landfill, so we don't really have a lot of natural areas to draw from to create a perimeter for the park, so we did have to enclose it entirely in fence material. A lot of parks you'll see, in Dakota Woods in particular, in Empire Township, have used a lot of natural areas and surroundings as their buffer to separate the park from other areas of the rest of their park. Also, there's lights at some parks. That's been a request for ours. Agility courses where people can exercise their dogs. Some people compete at dog agility. And we're also starting to see some artificial turf surfaces pop up where actually there's a company that makes an artificial turf specific to dog parks that's permeable for what dogs like to do when they do their things in parks. Demand and support. Exposure Landing, we went with a voluntary membership program. We were able to have sell 72 memberships so far. We do not require it. We do require, as part of our rules, and they may come to the dog park, have their pet be licensed, but in order to be a member, they can still come free of charge, but we ask and support the park to be a voluntary member. We sold 72 memberships. The range of admission types that we have throughout this country ranges from a daily admission that averages $5 a day, a required annual admission we found anywhere as low as 20, which is what we are for our voluntary up to $45 a year, voluntary membership like we have, and also a lot of people just have their park open free. A lot of groups have friends groups have formed to do additional fundraising, put additional amenities into dog parks. Our park does not have a friends group yet, but I believe it's just a matter of time before a group of volunteers get together to do some fundraising to help improve the park and maintain it. Also, where the outcomes of building a dog park, where are some of the benefits? Environmental, first and foremost. Dog parks easily take the place of any other use you could have of a certain area that doesn't have a higher use. With our park, we use ours on top of a landfill. Sometimes you'll see a utility corridor uses dog parks. So usually it's a good use of something where you just have open space and want to put an active amenity there. Also, pet waste is contained in a certain area. In South St. Paul, we have we get a lot of feedback about a lot of off-leash dogs where people will just generally take their dog on a walk and not have them on a leash. Again, city ordinance. Usually, if you have an owner that has that kind of mentality, usually they're not picking up their pet waste. Here, we know that dog owners are going to be responsible. They kind of self-police themselves and take care of the dog waste, so it's focused in a contained area and able to be disposed of properly. Compliance with local regulations, as I mentioned, the dog park's a good way to get people to abide by city code by designating an area for them to have their dogs off leash instead of just trying to not get caught by taking their dogs without a leash somewhere. Socialization is a big thing we hear from dog owners, that their pet has become a different type of pet after they've taken them to a dog park for the first time. Where if you have an isolated pet, sometimes they need to get around other dogs, and that turns them into a better behaved dog, better socialized dog. So we've gotten compliments about that. And of course, the last thing is, I'm going to note here, is exercise and fitness. Like I said, in South St. Paul, we're a built-up community, not a lot of big yards, not a lot of open spaces for pets to exercise or people to exercise their pets. So this gives people a place to go and exercise their pet and have a nice place. And socialization, not only for the pets, but also for the owners. You can see these little, that's how these friends groups kind of pop up, where you can see that they really have kind of a kinship, and different breeds of dogs end up having different groups, and they meet there every Thursday. We have a foster club that meets at our dog park every Thursday morning, for example, of this foster breed dog. So, that's really the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have specific to how our dog park operates or anything we found in our research.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Esser. Are there any questions? Representative Junkie.
Sorry I was late. I always like to talk about dog parks. So to the author or to, and you maybe answer this, so again, I'm sorry I'm late. Why are we doing this in Metropolitan Council? Why are we not doing it locally? Either county or city. Why does this have to be Metropolitan Council? Why can't South St. Paul develop their own dog park and issue their own licenses to their own people to use their own dog park, or even to neighboring towns coming in? Why is this coming to state government level?
Representative Hansen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junkie, South St. Paul did fund their own dog park, so it's done. This wouldn't be something that could start a dog park in South St. Paul. Right now, you have dog parks being created all over the state, but in difficult economic times, the funding for those dog parks usually falls under the property tax. So you have a high demand, but less capacity at the local level to be doing those. I searched for a funding mechanism as I was preparing this project. How do we get this to happen? And the constitutional amendment states that we have a parks and trails fund that's 14.25% of the constitutional amendment money for parks and trails of statewide or regional significance. I have this going to regional entity, the Metropolitan Council, can distribute those grants, a regional entity for regional significance, to help provide for the establishment of the parks and maintain those parks. So using the constitutional amendment dollars, not the Clean Water Fund, not the Outdoor Heritage Fund, not the Arts and Culture, but the Parks and Trails Fund, taking that for establishing these parks, which I believe have an environmental and a community benefit, and would also help municipalities, local units of government, be able to fund them without relying on the property tax.
And Mr. Chair, then I'll broaden my question. Okay, then why are we limiting it to Metropolitan Council? Why not Wilmer or Mankato or St. Cloud or anyone else that wants to have a dog park? How come they can't be part of this project?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, I thought we would try the experiment first, and then you would be able at the statewide level, if we took it in the future, maybe you would be interested in offering a bill at a statewide effort. But in these times, I think we need to look at this as a pilot project in the regional area of the metro area. But we can have that. We can have that discussion. There would be an entity. We have an entity in the metro area that can administer this, and I have it as a 2-year appropriation.
Representative Gardner.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hanson, I know in Shoreview we have a dog lovers galore, and I know they're going to like this because we're right near 3 county lines, so they could be able to go in different places in the metro. But I guess my question is about the advisory committee. We have so many advisory committees at the Met Council level. Like, if someone can answer that.
Representative Hanson?
Why do we need another advisory committee? I guess
Mr.
That's my
Chair
question.
And Representative Gardner, the author's amendment took care of an additional advisory committee. What we did is with that language was say that there's an existing the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission is already there, so we're not creating anything new. And that was a good assistance that we received from the Met Council that there's something there that can provide input into the process.
Okay, I got you.
Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hanson, don't we have a lot of dog parks in the metropolitan area already? Who's running those dog parks now? Aren't they local units of government that are taking care of that? They're already built. They're already functioning. And they're probably not being, you know, residents are probably not being charged a fee to go to those dog parks now. And does this bill change that? Now, does this bill say that now all of a sudden the dog parks that are already established, we're going to use this money to maintain those dog parks, but now we're going to charge a fee for people to go to those dog parks, parks that were already built with taxpayer dollars, property tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite get it. Are you trying to build more dog parks when we already have dozens and dozens of these things throughout the metropolitan area already? I think there's quite a few of them around that are already built and already being maintained with property tax dollars. Now, if you want to pass a law that says, well, all these dog parks in the metropolitan area are now going to be charged a $25 fee to use them to help maintain them, I'm all for it. But I don't think there's people crying for dog parks out there. I know you said that you heard it when you were door knocking, but I sure didn't hear it when I was door knocking. And I don't think people thought that these constitutionally dedicated dollars were going to be spent on dog parks.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, I believe there is high demand out there for dog parks, and sometimes the dog parks are kind of contentious issues within the municipalities, both on siting and on location and proximity. Often when I believe that in some cases where a dog park is created, there may follow up with expansion, so people are looking at maybe adding to it or adding nearby. So there's a very high demand in many areas around. I don't know about your district, but I certainly heard it in my district. And I think that what we're doing here is that the fee is for a regional park permit that can be used to go, so you could go to different parks around the area if those parks had received dollars from the grant program. I think, and I guess I would ask Mr. Esser, if South St. Paul didn't have a dog park, does he think that we would build one now, and would they want to participate in such a program?
Mr. Esser.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a few things. First of all, is there a proliferation of dog parks in the state of Minnesota? Absolutely not. We are one of only 3 dog parks in the whole county, Dakota County, hundreds of thousands of residents. Also, with park improvements, the reason I talked earlier about friends groups, the reason a lot of these friends groups have popped up is because they recognize a dog park as a regional amenity more so than a local amenity. And they realize that municipalities can't do it on their own, either develop a dog park or to sustain it over time. They do get a lot of use, and I think you'd be hard pressed to find a lot of people that wouldn't want one by their house if they're a dog lover. That's citing Representative Hanson said is probably one of the barriers along with cost. But certainly people are looking to make improvements that already have existing dog parks. Some do charge a fee, some do not. That's basically for maintenance and to get people to be responsible. Hopefully those dollars being dedicated back to those dog parks. But do we have a lot of dog parks in the metro area? I don't believe we do. One thing that sticks out in my mind, just as an example, there was an article in the Pioneer Press this past fall, and they were working on their park master plan for the city of St. Paul. And two of the open forums totally got derailed because they had a bunch of people show up asking for a dog park. And the thing that was kind of chuckling about the article is it almost turned into an auction where somebody said, if we built more dog parks here in St. Paul, I'd pay $50 to go. And somebody said, I'd pay $70. Somebody said, I'd pay $100 for any occurrence. And so the author of this article in the Pioneer Press, you know, kind of joked about it, or it almost became an auction. But if the city of St. Paul, which already has, I believe, 3 dog parks, has a resident showing up wanting more, that's just an indication of how treasured these are. And ours has been extremely popular. I can honestly tell you, of all the parks and recreation projects I've ever done, I've worked for 5 agencies in my career, I have gotten the fastest, quickest, most praise about over any other project about this project, and the biggest hurry of people just raving about this is just a fantastic addition to our community. That's talking locally in South St. Paul. I'm sure you hear from a lot of other people in other areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Esser. And Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe to the test fire, how many dogs are at one of these dog parks at one time? And you how do you dispose of all the remnants? How do you dispose, Representative Virginius, of all the outcomes?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we do at our dog park, and most a lot are similar, is that's one of the first questions that usually comes up, is there's a lot of pet waste, what are you going to do with it, how are you going to get people to pick it up? What happens is people are very good at self-policing themselves. Of course, they don't want their dog stepping in it, they don't want to step in it, so if a dog owner isn't picking up their pet waste, they're on top of it immediately. What we do at our dog park, we have a system called the Mutt-Mitt. It's actually a brand name. And it's basically 4 different bag dispensers where you go, get your bag out, your dog does their business, you pick it up, and then we have rubbish containers throughout the entire park so you can dispose of that. And our crews come and pick it up and make sure it's disposed of properly.
Okay. Representative Dale.
Well, that's what I was wondering about. How is it disposed of properly? And I'm serious about this. I mean, this is could be a concentrated amount of that outcome in one place, and I'm thinking that, you know, maybe you need an on-site septic system for it, or how does it get disposed of? I'm just wondering about it. And anyway, that's the question.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do take ours to the landfill. You'll probably find out that it wouldn't be disposed of by the city any differently than what a homeowner should do. And if somebody's out taking their dog for a walk 2-3 times a day, you'd hope they'd be picking up their pet waste, disposing of it similarly as we do, so ours does end up in the landfill. So I wouldn't say it's in a concentrated amount. It would be probably any different than if all the households were on the regular rubbish route in the city of South St. Paul, what they pick up.
And Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I guess my question center around, I'm going to go first in the direction of it, is the Parks and Trails funding. And I would think that the first thing we would think about doing is putting some money in the maintenance of our trails and of our parks throughout the state before we go off in this direction. This happens to be an area I think that we have had some success. They are very controversial. I don't know that this is the first direction we should be going with the parks and trails money. We are way, way underfunding the maintenance of the trail system. We could be using some of that money late this fall, or is it later this summer, early this fall, to be putting into the maintenance of the trails. And I just think the people that strongly support it, as you and I know, as we were door knocking last year, I'd have a hard time a year from now or a year and a half from now when I'm door knocking, if I will be, trying to tell the people this is the first bill, this is the first spot that we spent money on for the dedicated funding for the outdoors and the environment. I think there's a lot of communities, especially as you get farther out into the state, this isn't how they envision the treatment of their dogs. I think they like, I don't know about Wilmer, but in Hastings, I overlook a ponding basin, and oftentimes somebody's working their dog in Hastings, and in Hastings, we have an under control. This would look pretty radical to me if now that's what somebody has to do with their dog, walk them through this fence steel, and I'm not sure I figure out if you're supposed to keep them leashed till you get in there, and then when you get in there, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is, I just think this is getting off the beaten path of the direction that we were thinking of when we were working hard to get this passed.
Representative Hanson, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McNamara. I anticipate that we're going to have a number of proposals, this being the Policy Committee, not the Finance Committee or the Constitutional Cultural and Outdoor Committee, that we'll have a full discussion of all kinds of proposals and have to rank and prioritize. I submitted the bill because it is new money. It's not supplanting existing state dollars. It's not substituting existing state dollars. I put the bill out there as a concept that has to come for this. I believe that it is an environmental benefit to the people of the state. I believe that it does fit in the parameters of the Constitution. The funding decisions are going to come through that whole funding process when this bill and other recommendations come to those committees where they have the money. I think this is something. If we look at the total millions of dollars that will be coming to the Parks and Trails from the Parks and Trails Fund, what we're asking here is for $500,000. We're not asking for a large amount per year. And we're also looking at a two-year period to try to get this implemented. And I believe it would impact a lot of people and a lot of who have pets who would get outside and go to the parks and use the park system. I agree with you on maintenance and operations with trails and with our state parks, and we've been funding those in the bonding proposals. I'm sure we're going to see additional dollars come in. I believe we do need to do maintenance and operations. This is the first bill that's before you this because I dropped it in. I can't control what each of the rest of you do in terms of your bill introductions, but I put this forward, I worked on it, and it's going to go through several committees before there's decisions made on the use of those dollars. I believe it is an appropriate use and would fit within the means of the Constitution.
Representative Steele.
Again, this is actually, I think, a question for Representative Lugenia. Could you remind me, is it $100 million in deferred maintenance in our state park system alone?
We had a figure. I think it was something over $100 million for 10 years, but that wasn't all deferred maintenance. I would say 60, this is now you're pushing me a little bit, but I would say 65%-ish was deferred maintenance, and the rest was new little projects in current parks. So that was, those are rough figures.
Okay, Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to, I'm looking at this Metropolitan Council newsletter, and in here, I just want to speak to the issue of that there's not a lot of dog parks around. There is a lot of dog parks in the metropolitan area. There's more than, according to the Metropolitan Council's newsletter, more than two dozen dog parks in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Just so you know. I just don't see this as a top priority. I don't know why we're even talking about
it. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, there is one person who would like to testify, Mr. Brian Rice from Minneapolis Parks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
thank you, Mr. Rice.
Brian Rice, attorney for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and thank you, Representative Hanson, for bringing this issue forward. I guess my testimony is a little bit commentary, some things for the committee to think on. Minneapolis has five dog parks. Two are in our regional parks, three are in our neighborhood parks, and believe it or not, they are very popular. When I first heard this notion on the park board about 12 years ago, I thought, kind of a crackpot idea. It's not. We have 107,000 dogs in the city of Minneapolis, 380,000 residents. But of those 107,000 dogs, only about 10,000 are actually licensed. And the dog parks we have are extremely popular. I mean, they're very popular. If you go to the south end of Lake of the Isles, or if you go to Minnehaha State Park, we have dog parks there. Almost any day of the year, you're going to find the parking lots that are closest to those dog parks extremely full. I mean, people love their dogs. They love their pets. Representative Hackbar talked about 24 parks. We've got like 5 of the 24. There's going to be a lot more because I don't know what it is, but people really like these parks. They need a place to recreate their pets and themselves. I think as the era, the metropolitan area becomes more urbanized, there's a need for it. I think that the testifier from South St. Paul pointed out they're kind of a new emerging source of recreation that Minnesotans like to have. What we found too with the dog parks, they're revenue raisers to a degree, and that's Minneapolis charges a $19 fee to have your dog in the park. But there's also that's the permit to get in the park. There's also a license, and the good part about the parks is you can't be in the parks without a license. So it actually encourages dog owners to get their pets licensed. And in Minneapolis, a little more sophisticated, it's cheaper to license a sterilized dog than it is a unsterilized dog, just in terms of the whole public safety issue about that and proliferations of pets. And there's a fee there. There are some concerns I have with the bill, and one is having the Metropolitan Council collect a fee. I'm sure the Met Council doesn't have a lot of locations. They're an operating agency for buses and some other things, but I really do think the permitting for the park stuff, that raises a big issue. We've had some of these debates. Representative McNamara sat in on some of them, the issue about, you know, if you get a parking permit in Dakota County, is it good in Minneapolis, is it good in St. Paul, and we have a big metropolitan area, how do you kind of, you know, co-locate fees from, you know, this parking system to another. A lot of the metropolitan agencies do survive primarily on property tax levies, about 90%, about 85%. About 10% of the support for the general system comes from the state through O&M and lottery and lieu. But there has been a lot of encouragement by the state legislature to have, like you do with the state parks, to get fees from your residents. So it's not just free. There's some element where you need to pay money. And a lot of the local agencies, Minneapolis Parks particularly, all the St. Paul, the seven counties, have tried to do a lot working with fees. So it's not just we're going to the general property taxpayer to support this. We would be concerned about the bill because this actually generates over $100,000 in fees from us for dog parks. And 10 years ago, it was nothing. And if you'd imagine that we've got 107,000 dogs in the city. Now that's an estimate, but probably a pretty good one. We have 9,830 licensed dogs in the city. We've got less than 10% licensed. If these dog parks are there and it serves as a vehicle to get people to license their pets, A, you're probably creating a safer community because the officials will know what animals are in their jurisdiction, but you may also create some revenue. But I would like to work with Representative Hansen or as the committee looks at this to find an appropriate way to do it. I mean, our personal preference would be to say dogs are licensed locally. That's very typical of any city in the state. We also think the permits probably should be done locally, and maybe there's some, you know, sharing of that if it's possible. And I would share some of the other concerns of the committee. I worked on the constitutional amendments, you know, in the legislature for 10 years in the campaign. I'm not sure that everyone thought maybe this is the first issue that's coming forward. I would share Representative Steele's concerns about general maintenance, not only the state system, but our system. It's going to be a tricky debate you're going to have, I think, in the legislature of balancing, you know, new projects versus taking care of what you have. Government's under stress as it is now. It's kind of hard to argue we should go out and build a lot of new things when, quite frankly, maintaining what's there is going to be a challenge, and it's probably going to be more of a challenge at the end of this session than it was at the start of the session. But I do applaud Representative Hansen. I mean, I think particularly the metropolitan area, people are going to see that this is kind of an emerging issue. We have had experience in our area where we've had, actually one of the most recent dog parks we opened up is being now kind of fully serviced by a local community group. I mean, they raised the money, they helped with the maintenance in Loring Park, they carved out a very small area. And you can imagine, if you imagine in downtown Minneapolis, there's a lot of people in these big condominium buildings, but they have their dogs. And again, you know, my reaction 12 years ago when I first heard about it, I kind of laughed about it, but people love their pets, and there's a lot of them, and they need to be socialized, recreated, I think this may be, probably one of the reasons I did want to get up. I think kind of how this committee and the whole legislature decides how to allocate these funds is going to be a big challenge, because there are some opportunities to do some great things, but there's also a huge backlog of needs in the rest of the system all the way along.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. And Representative Dale has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, if these are so popular, and I suppose they are, pretty convincing testimony, why couldn't you sell revenue bonds to finance these developments and retire the revenue bonds with user fees? And I also, in thinking about this, I know that this was a vision of Senator Lessard. I'm going to call him tonight and find out what he thinks about building a dog park with some of the first money out of the chute from the constitutional amendment, although I don't think he envisioned we were going to split it up the way we did. And just wonder about that. You don't have to answer that part, but what about the revenue side of that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bill, I think that you are going to see local units of government try to meet the demands of their citizens in a number of ways. Some may, they're going to choose that they will put this on the property tax, that they may raise fees, that they may look at other sources to operate. I'm providing a funding source here that I think works. I think we can have that discussion on the financing in the finance committee. The next stop on this, if it passes here, is to go to local government. I think these questions about jurisdiction, how local governments work on it, the myriad of municipalities within the metropolitan area, Met Council, all of us, we can work on a variety of those things to bring it through local government, and then it's going to get into the finance committees where you'd get another crack at it.
Mr. Chairman, to represent Bill's question, I do know when I worked on it with Senator Lessard on this, he told me that he used to walk his daughter's dog around Lake of the Isles frequently. We had a dog park now there, and it's just pretty popular.
Representative Sterner.
I just was going to give some of my insight of, between being on Rosemont City Council the last 4 years and 6 years before that at Park and Rec, and I also served on the capital campaign for the Humane Society in Dakota County. I definitely think this is popular. It would be, I just have a problem probably with the administration of the one with the Met Council on an 11-member committee, and then maybe the funding part, but definitely I think the dog parks are a park of recreation, and I think the Humane Society says 57% of people have dogs, but I know when I was door knocking, I think it was well over 80% had them in that den. And people would say they had their poodles, and say, well, they're bored with the Dakota County Dog Park, and they want a new stimulation then. So that would be maybe my problems with it, but the park and the concept is real good.
Thank you. Just to respond to Representative Sterner, that 11 members is gone, that portion of the
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for Mr. Rice. How do you police the dog parks? And is a dog owner issued a fine or a warning? And how do you split it if they're licensed but they don't necessarily have the permit for participating or attending a dog park?
Mr. Rice.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon. In Minneapolis, we have a separate park Police Department, 30 officers. We have a number of agents as well. And I think you'd find in some of the other regional parks they have that an ability to do that. Most of the time on these permits, it's done by the local either law enforcement, but, you know, frequently not police officers, but they would have, service people or cadets. And enforcement is an issue. I mean, largely there's not a policeman or an agent, a park agent at the gate, but they do check licenses. Our system is that if you're caught, really in the Minneapolis system anywhere, if you're caught parking and you don't have a permit, you get a ticket. But if you pay, instead of paying the ticket, we want you to buy the pass. And we figure that's a better way to comply rather than just a fine. So if you find a dog in the park, we tell you you're either. So the fine is the amount of what it costs to get the permit and the license, and so you kind of voluntary compliance and encourage them to do it. And there is a lot of ownership in these parks. I mean, they do become communities. If you're ever by Minneapolis Park any day of the year, even in the dead of winter, and you go to the south end of Minneapolis Park, the parking lot's full almost every day because people are there using it. And but we do work with compliance, and we do will send. People do get checked for their licenses and their permits, and particularly in Minneapolis, when dangerous dogs have been issues and people have actually been killed with dogs, the city of Minneapolis takes it very seriously on compliance with animal control.
Just a
follow-up.
With the creation of the dog parks, was that in response to problems of people letting their dogs off the leash in parks that are predominantly either geared for children or just for adults to use?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loon, it really became an issue. There was a community of dog owners. Generally, they did not have children, but had dogs and were looking for a place to recreate and really kind of be separate from kids, and they wanted off leash areas. I mean, let the dogs run rather than walk them on a leash. And that effort started in kind of the northern end of Representative Thiessen's district, around Lake Harriet, kind of in the mid-90s. And that particular group, we could not really find a park that was appropriate around that part of the Chain of Lakes, but we did find one around Lake of the Isles and then Minnehaha. We have one in Loring Park. We have one in Columbia Park in Northeast, and there is one other one along the river. And it is a challenge. I'm sure Senator Lassard will probably be interested in hearing that, but you probably haven't heard the last novel idea on how to spend this money, Representative Hill.
I anticipate there will be a lot of novel ideas as well. And I guess as far as my feeling on it, it does meet the requirements as far as parks and trails is concerned, and the funding that would go towards that. And while, in my area, obviously, we don't need dog parks in my area. The whole farm is a dog park, and we have a very large dog. But certainly there are going to be things that people in our area are going to want as well. And I think that a lot of these things should be part of the discussion. And we need to, I could use a donkey park up there, but anyway.
It might expand the day. I know the zoos were around here earlier, and there was certainly a lot of debate about that. I mean, I don't know if we have, I just want to say, too, I mean, as a park person, one issue that I think I've asked the legislature to consider, a lot of local agencies have kind of a good sense of priorities, this is an emerging issue, but it's going to be these resources, even though there's a lot of money relative to what's been there, the demand, as Representative Hill pointed out, is really pretty huge in terms of backlog work and just kind of, more basic needs. But.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Rice. And I certainly understand those who would want to have the open space for their dogs, as I say, being a dog owner myself. Representative Hansen, did you have any? I don't think there's any other questions.
I just want to.
So, Representative Hansen.
Thank the testifiers, and we are close. The dog park in South St. Paul is very close, so if members would like to come and see that and see how it works, I'd be happy to to help with that. My predecessors in the legislature from South St. Paul initiated programs about a dozen years ago called the Mighty Ducks Program, where you provided grants to local governments for hockey. And at that same time, that people asked the same questions. Is this an appropriate use of funds? Should we be doing things for hockey rinks? I kind of look at this as the Mighty Dog Bill, not the Mighty Ducks Bill, and I think it would be an opportunity to be using the dollars, the sales tax dollars that are there. I think it would help the environment by bringing people out into the parks and using those parks. So I'd appreciate your consideration and support and would renew my motion.
Okay. Mighty Dog is better than Underdog, I guess.
True.
But, with that, Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 297 be recommended to pass and referred to Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Reform. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Okay, that's it. We had a short meeting today, so meeting adjourned. Have a good weekend.